Welcome back to Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign gained much-needed momentum over the weekend when he won landslide victories in three state primaries, Washington, Alaska, and Hawaii. Each win was by more than 70% of the vote. Sanders, who had been struggling to catch up to his rival Hillary Clinton after her sweeping wins in southern states, said at a rally in Wisconsin, quote, "We knew things were going to improve as we headed west." My guest is Mary Bottari. She is the director of the Center for Media and Democracy's Real Economy Project, editor of their banksterusa.org site, and she just wrote an article on PR Watch entitled Easter Rebellion, Three States Give Bernie Sanders Landslide Victories. Welcome to the show, Mary.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. How significant are these victories? Polls certainly suggested that he was going to win as he headed into the Easter weekend. Anything surprising?
Well, what's significant about them, I think, is that he's now at 1,000 pledged delegates compared to Clinton's 1,200 pledged delegates. Now, there's a lot of discussion about superdelegates, and most of the superdelegates are with Clinton. But let me tell you, if he gets above Clinton or draws even with Clinton, superdelegates are members of Congress and other elected officials who get to change their mind about who they're supporting, and the race just becomes much more interesting.
And is there precedent for that? Do superdelegates often change their mind when they get closer to the conventions?
Oh, sure. That's happened many times in history. And it's difficult to predict about an individual superdelegate. But things get turned upside down sometimes.
So I'm wondering whether you think that he, given what we are expecting now between now and the rest of the state primaries, whether you think it's likely Nate Silver of 538.com, who was quite wrong in the Michigan primary, so now we have to sort of take his predictions with a grain of salt, but he's predicted that Bernie Sanders will win the nomination. As far as you can see, just sort of surveying the rest of the landscape, is it realistic that he could keep racking up enough wins to challenge Clinton?
Well, I'm not an expert on all these states. He has a big state coming up, New York, and both candidates have very strong ties to New York. Sanders was raised in Brooklyn, has a lot of deep ties there. Hillary Clinton was invited by the New York Times and other elites in New York to come in and be their U.S. senator and ran and was their U.S. senator for a number of years. So there's big prizes coming up. But the first big prize coming up, may I just say, as a Wisconsinite,
yeah.
is the great state of Wisconsin, April 5th. And Wisconsin is just a fascinating state because it's a Rust Belt state. We've been hit hard by trade. We certainly have a lot of right-wingers in political office right now, but we've been traditionally a purple state, and we've been very, very independent. We voted for Joe McCarthy, and then later in life, we voted for Russ Feingold. I mean, just very independent. So I think the Sanders campaign believes that they have a very good chance in Wisconsin, and then that will be four in a row leading into New York, and they keep talking about momentum. And it's true. Right now, Sanders does have momentum.
I want to just stay for a bit on the victories over the weekend. There's been a lot made over the fact that Sanders often isn't given the media coverage that he deserves. My colleague at KPFA in Berkeley, Brian Edwards Tickard, commented on Facebook where he was looking at a New York Times, an actual physical paper, a copy of the New York Times over the weekend after the Easter victories by Sanders. And the Sanders victories were sort of below the fold on the bottom of the front page. Didn't even mention Hawaii, didn't talk about the fact that Hawaii has a very diverse population, where whites are in the minority. And on the top of the fold was Trump and a 100-minute interview with Trump about his foreign policy. This just a day after Nicholas Kristof wrote an article in the New York Times about how the media is really guilty of making Trump up and kind of undermining Sanders. What did you make of the media coverage of the Sanders victories over the weekend?
Well, it wasn't covered very well here in Wisconsin, and yet Ted Cruz's kerfluffle with Donald Trump over their wives was given extensive coverage. So it seems like every Trump tweet gets extensive coverage, but what's missing and what's important in a state like Wisconsin is, why are voters voting the way they are? Who's out there interviewing them? Who's out there talking to them? Because in Wisconsin, I expect Donald Trump will do better than expected, because he's talking about trade. That's an issue that's really powerful here. And I expect that Bernie Sanders will do better than expected, because he's talking about trade, jobs, loss of manufacturing, abandoned and destroyed cities, and how government can play a role in building that back up. I think that those types of issues are very important to Wisconsin voters.
The issue of Sanders running the way he is. One other thing that came up over the weekend, which I was pretty surprised by, was Ralph Nader's article, where he said why Bernie Sanders was right to run as a Democrat. A week ago or so, I had interviewed Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, and you know, the person who is likely to be the nominee for the Green Party, a role that Nader famously had himself. And Jill Stein criticizes Sanders for running as a Democrat, but for Nader to come out and say that the system is rigged against people who are running as independents, and therefore Bernie Sanders was right to run as a Democrat, what do you make of that?
Well, I agree with that analysis. There's no doubt that the system is rigged. Third-party voting doesn't work very well in many states, unless you're in a state like New York, which has something special, a special voting technique called fusion voting. Elsewhere, it doesn't work very well. You know, another thing that's going on here in Wisconsin is the candidates are talking a lot about Scott Walker. And I'm going to be very curious, Trump. Former governor. No, wait, I'm sorry. He's the current governor.
I'm sorry. Wishful thinking. There were efforts so to oust him.
You've done many shows on Walker's union busting and Walker's steep slashes to the budget and to the education and all those things. And today he's one of the most unpopular governors in the United States. And so it was great over the weekend to hear Sanders talking specifically about Wisconsin's, talking specifically about Walker, challenging him on voter ID, saying if you can't participate in free and fair elections where everybody votes, get out of politics, get another job. I think that if candidates do that in the state, we'll expect that both from Hillary and Bernie, that will get people a lot more excited about their candidacy.
Now, some people are worried about Wisconsin's voter ID law. The primary is next week, as you mentioned, April 5th. And we saw an enormous debacle in Arizona last week, where thousands of people had to wait many, many hours in line. Many sort of unknown numbers of people potentially disenfranchised. It's not clear whether it had much effect on the vote count, since Hillary Clinton won by quite a margin, and that was predicted going into the race. Still, is there any chance of something similar happening in Wisconsin?
Well, it's hard to tell. This will be the first time it's been in effect. We had a federal court judge stop it here in Wisconsin for a number of years because, by his estimate, 300,000 people could be disenfranchised. It's unclear. Efforts have been made by the State Elections Board, and efforts have been made by independent groups like the League of Women Voters to reach out to people to try and get them registered. And so it's unclear what's going to happen. But my big worry are these campuses, because sometimes people don't tune in to the election until the last few days. And on most campuses, students do not have the proper identification, and the law was written that way deliberately. So we've had problems on our campuses before with not having enough ballots because there's been a surge in campus voting. So I really am going to be keeping an eye on what happens with the voter ID on the campuses.
I want to also talk briefly with you about money in elections. I know this is an issue that you and your organization have also also focused on, particularly the influence of big money, such as from the Koch brothers. And you mentioned this in your article. The real spending, of course, will come when the general election begins between July and November. That's when we're going to see TV networks in particular flooded with millions of dollars of money from these super PACs. How frightening is the landscape going to be, you expect, given where we are at, thanks to the Supreme Court Citizens United decision between July and November?
Frightening is a good word. Mm. There will be already the Koch brothers say that they have spent, the Koch brothers network says it has spent $400 million in this election cycle. And, you know, we're experts in this. We track dark money as best we can, and we can't see that money. We don't know what they mean when they say they spent $400 million. We're not seeing those ads on TV. Are they hiring 100 staff in every state? Are they working on a master database that, you know, will track every voter and their metadata down to the last, you know, purchase of shoes on Zappos? I mean, what exactly are they doing with $400 million? So, unfortunately, the way Citizens United has come about, we now have these massive expenditures going on that we just can't track. And sometimes years later, we can see in IRS filings certain information about certain expenditures, but on the ground in the election, it's very difficult to track them.
And that is indeed frightening. And we're going to be, of course, covering that angle as much as we can. We'll see how much information leaks out, if you will, between now and November. By the way, Sanders slammed Hillary Clinton for this fundraising dinner over the weekend that was announced over the weekend by actor George Clooney and his celebrity lawyer wife, that basically is asking donors to shell out more than $350,000 for two seats at the head table at a fundraising dinner. Another fundraiser where per person tickets are more than $33,000. Are these fundraising dinners essentially a way for one percenters to back Hillary Clinton? And is Sanders right to call her out?
Well, this technique was used by Obama in the past, this sort of celebrity access to celebrities as a way of raising money. I thought it was pretty astonishing. However, my 12-year-old daughter was very excited by it and thought I should definitely, you know, sign in. What's noble about what Sanders is doing is that he's leading by example in the campaign finance arena. They say that he's raised already $138 million. And when he tells the crowd that he has 6 million individual donors, and he goes, and they raise contributions, he goes, and the average contribution is, and the whole crowd shouts back, $27. So this has become a mantra of him and his supporters, and it really is truly remarkable. And I haven't looked at the data of how it will be going forward, how much he will need, how much money he will need to raise up from those people. But 6 million individual donors is a heck of a lot of people. And if they continue to chip in just a little bit, he will be able to be competitive for a long period of time. Hmm.
Finally, Mary, even though Ralph Nader says that it was right for Sanders to run as a Democrat, at some point, if Hillary Clinton, with her wins plus superdelegate pledges, ends up being the nominee, it's going to be it's going to continue to be an interesting race. There are news reports that Hillary Clinton has sort of backed off in recent days from attacking Sanders, focusing more on Trump, kind of laying the groundwork for wooing Sanders on the assumption that she'll win the primary and need Sanders to send his supporters to her. Many in the Sanders camp are saying they would rather sit out the election than vote for Hillary Clinton. And so others are saying, well, it does make sense for him to build the momentum for kind of creating an independent third party or fourth party, if he chooses not to go green, you know, the way of the Green Party, that there really is already enough groundwork for him to run as an independent or lay the groundwork for an independent movement to take back the electoral process. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on this, that this late in the game, if Sanders could still, not throw his, we could see a scenario where if he's not the nominee, he's not going to throw his weight behind Clinton either.
Well, I can only tell you what he says. And he said at the rally here in Madison that Hillary Clinton and he are in 100% agreement that the next president of the United States should not be a Republican. Okay, so that's what he says. And he spent more time talking about Scott Walker than he did about Hillary Clinton at his most recent stop. So I think people are envisioning a lot of futures for this movement that has popped up across the nation in support of Sanders. But right now, it seems pretty clear from talking to his campaign aides, a little bit on the sidelines at this event, that they're focused on winning. And I have to say, that comes as a little bit of a surprise, because behind the scenes and outside, people are like talking about platform fights and this and that and, building a rainbow coalition for the future and a third party here and a third party. And they're like, we're focused on winning. We see a path to victory. We're focused on winning. And so that's where their head is right now. And Wisconsin on April 5th will either really give him a boost or, be a big disappointment.
Is Wisconsin a winner-take-all state? What is the each state has such different primaries. Is there a closed primary
yeah,
or can independent?
No, an open primary. There's a lot of mischief that can be. There's a lot of mischief that can be had by people switching voting. Democrats voting in the Republican primaries and Republicans voting in the Democratic primaries. It's a very interesting state that way. But Sanders has deep roots here. He's come here every year for many years in a row to an annual progressive festival called Fighting Bob Fest. Fighting Bob was our progressive U.S. senator who ran for the presidency in the 1920s, if you remember. And so he knows the state well, he knows the politicians well, and he's feeling very positive about this, I think.
Well, Mary, we'll see how it plays out next week. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll post a link to your article from our website later today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali.
Mary Botari is the director of the Center for Media and Democracy's Real Economy Project and editor of their banksterusa.org website. And she just wrote an article in PR Watch about Bernie Sanders' victories. Again, check risingupwithsonali.com later today for a link to this interview. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar.